on this episode of Risky Business.
So what we've learned is that if you really want compliance to be done right, if you want solutions that stick and that keep, you have to do a lot more than that. You have to design controls. You have to identify owners of those controls. You have to monitor and test them. And that's the way that you can make sure that you have solutions that stick.
I'm Steve Muddyman, and this is Risky Business, a show from GAN Integrity covering the wide range of issues in compliance and ethics, but with one goal in mind, empowering your people to do the right thing. Today, we're delving into the world of global operations and compliance with a special focus on wireless, enterprise, and international services. Joining us is Chief Compliance Officer at Verizon, David Cass. In this episode, we explore the layers of Verizon's decentralized compliance approach, discovering how it synchronizes with their partners in information security, their privacy teams, and business unit compliance arms. David shares how a comprehensive compliance strategy is key, including designing, owning, monitoring, and testing controls. There is also some great insight on how the compliance team engages with and manages relationships with their third parties. With a compliance team that's grown significantly under his watch, David brings a wealth of experience and is set to discuss the importance of flexibility and open-mindedness in the field of compliance. It's a fascinating listen. So with that, let me hand over to David. So today's episode of Risky Business, I'm delighted to welcome David Cass, Chief Compliance Officer at Verizon. David, it's a pleasure to have you. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be here. Thank you, Steve.
And whereabouts are we speaking to you today?
I'm in beautiful Washington, D.C.
That's great to hear. And I think you told me that the weather's actually pretty fine but cold, right?
Cold but sunny, so I'll take it.
There you go. Unlike the gray-black background that you can see in the sky behind me. And I always say at this point, given that we are operating on two different time zones, many will know that with my accent, I'm in the UK. And as we record this, I'm sure you're going to see the darkness descend behind me throughout the duration of this podcast. So with that having been said, it's a delight to have you on. I can imagine that almost everybody knows who Verizon are, a multinational telecoms giant. Why don't we start there? Just say a little bit about the business and, you know, really the scope of what Verizon is up to in terms of its sheer scale.
I think we're best known for our U.S. wireless business. So that certainly is a very big part of what the company does and a very big part of what we do from a compliance perspective. There are a lot of other parts of the company which actually require a lot of compliance attention as well. So we have the Verizon Business Group, which sells to enterprise customers, both wireless and wireline services. And we also have a significant presence outside the United States. So we have thousands of employees outside the U.S., again, largely focused on providing communications and network services to large enterprise customers. Those types of services obviously come with significant compliance responsibilities, whether it's FCPA type compliance or just everything that goes with managing the international workforce. So it's a large, complex, and constantly changing company.
So on that point, being able as the Chief Compliance Officer of Verizon, can you give us a sense of, you talked about compliance responsibilities and the constant changing of that. I think most listening would get that. Could we just go down a level there and just sort of help us to understand how you and your team is set up, what the priorities are there, you know, what the skill types are within the business, the kinds of risk areas that you're really concerned about and have a focus on? Give us a sort of a picture of that landscape, if you like, because you know, it's a pretty big elephant we're dealing with here in terms of the scale of what you're up to.
Let me start with talking a little bit about my team. And so, like you said, I'm the Chief Compliance Officer for the company, and I have a few different teams under me. So I have an ethics team. We manage investigations. We have a team that leads training, communications, and program management. We handle high-risk regulatory issues, and we handle trade and anti-corruption. So those are all handled centrally out of my team. We also have an enterprise risk management team at the company. And ERM means different things at every company. At Verizon, it's a very compliance-focused team and has made a very big difference for us in the level of success we have in tackling those complex issues. And so ERM, I can talk a little bit more about exactly what they do, but the ERM team also includes our third third-party risk management team. So again, that's part of the organization I manage. They're housed in finance, but they dotted line to me, and I direct their compliance work, which is substantial. So that's what I manage, but we're pretty decentralized, and there's a lot of compliance that goes on outside of my team. And so we have really important compliance partner organizations. So we have a CISO who handles our information security issues, which at a company like Verizon are critically important. We have a privacy team led by a chief privacy officer, again, separate from my organization, but we work very closely with them. And we have business unit compliance teams that handle issues really specific to the consumer business, specific to our enterprise business, issues that really need to be managed very close to those business groups. That's the basic structure. A lot of other players, they're all critically important. And I'll just touch on, like when you mentioned in your question, you were talking about how do we manage the complexity of the organization. That's really kind of the central challenge. When you have a place that's this big with this many employees where things are changing as much as they are, one thing that we've seen is like what I would call kind of an old school approach of handling it as a legal question, you know, compliance issues where I gave my legal advice, I sent a memo, and what happens after that is really not my problem. That does not work in an organization like ours. And so what we've learned is that if you really want compliance to be done right, if you want solutions that stick and that keep, you have to do a lot more than that. You have to design controls. You have to identify owners of those controls. You have to monitor and test them. And that's the way that you can make sure that you have solutions that stick. That's why I mentioned enterprise risk management as being so critical to us is, you know, that's kind of the non-legal part of the compliance team, and having experts and controls who can really help us design those, who know what good looks like and who can design a framework whereby we are monitoring and testing those has really made a difference for us. In an environment like ours, having that team, which again is relatively new, really stood up within the last 4 or 5 years, has made a huge difference for us.
You mentioned there about the controls part. So let's go down that path just a moment there. Often when I speak to leaders like yourself, I'll ask questions like, what are the things that you do monitor? So you talked about designing those controls, having ownership of those controls, and you talked about the ability to monitor and measure those controls. There will be different levels, of course, of outcomes you're looking to keep a close eye on and monitor. There will be visibility that you will give to certain types of controls to different stakeholders in and around the organization. How do you go about doing that? And you talked about those other partners that sit outside of the team. And I think that's a really, really important area to delve into a little as well. The CISO will have his or her respective requirements, outcomes, controls, and the ability and desire to manage those and effectively be on top of them. And we'll have stakeholders that require outputs from there. You talked about privacy, and then you talked about the business units that focus on the more consumer side of the business too. How do you connect the dots here with all of what's going on? Because there will be a set of requirements that you absolutely, given the team that you described just now, have a maniacal focus on. There's also these other contributing factors that are the partners that you describe, which all contribute in some way, don't they, to being able to build this more holistic view of what's really going on across the business.
That's really the name of the game. I mean, that is the central challenge, is bringing that all together. And for me, there are a couple of principles that really can make the difference between success and failure. One of them is flexibility. You can't be dogmatic about this. You have to be open-minded as you create these structures. And this is something I've really tried to and to really stick to as I've been in this job. You have willing to take kind of the piece of paper that you have filled with all of your things that you're really attached to and be willing to tear it up, because you don't always know what's going to be effective. And so you have to constantly assess what you're doing, see if the control that you've designed, if the task that's being carried out is one that's adding value. It might be after a year of this thing being in place and monitoring and looking at it, that this is actually make work and it is not making the company a better place. It is not reducing risk. It's really important to be able to admit that and to admit a mistake and move on and pivot. That is consuming resources, and it's actually harming the compliance effort when you're doing things that are not contributing value, right? So flexibility, both in being willing to pivot away from things that you've created that aren't good, but also being really open-minded in working with those partners that have, you know, those are the subject matter experts. So if we're working in the privacy space, we're going to take a lot of guidance from the privacy team. They are the experts in that field. We're also going to take contributing inputs from our internal audit team. We have a fantastic internal audit team that is constantly helping us learn lessons and find gaps. And so it's important that we take the learnings from there. As I said at the beginning, my team handles investigation. That's another source of input about where things go wrong. I've seen in the past investigations teams very close-lipped about what they do, and it's all kind of a state secret. You're not learning the lessons, and you're not going to fix the problems that come up in the investigations, and you're also not going to solve all of the similar issues that have, you know, kind of analogous problems unless you share those broadly. So we really do try to share the outputs of investigations very broadly. So I think you need to be flexible, both in willing to revisit what you've done, and you need to be very flexible and open-minded about taking inputs from all those partner organizations.
And do, just following on that thought there, I think all of us in our respective roles have to recognize, you know, fail fast and move on where the opportunity presents and where you see evidence that, you know, clearly something isn't working, as you said there, be willing to pivot away from things that don't work. Give us a sense of how, so you talked about your team, you talked about the ethics team focused on investigations, you talked about training being really important, and we'll speak about that in a moment perhaps. You talked about those high risk areas that need to have a dedicated focus. You talked about trade and you talked about enterprise risk management, including TPRM. How big is that team when we think about the number of individuals in there to give it some scale for people?
So my organization, the sort of the people who directly report to me or who are dotted line organizations, it's about 100 people overall. And if you include kind of the partner organizations, then it's much larger. But the sort of the real sort of compliance, central corporate compliance organization is about 100 folks. And that's substantially more than when I started in this job 5 years ago. And so we have just so many new capabilities that we didn't have, that I had on day one when I moved into this role.
When you think about some of those elements, there's a combination of, and I'm going to simplify it really for the purposes of the conversation now. You talked about two elements which you could really look at internally, if you will, specifically around, you know, investigations or incident management and the related issues with that. The assumption I'm making of then embedding that through the organization by ensuring everybody understands what doing the right thing is, if I could put it that way, and then training them to understand how to recognize when something isn't right and understanding what to do about that. Those elements are really focused on the internal aspect of ensuring the business can operate with the highest levels of ethical behavior. Then we look at some of those other aspects when we talk about trade and we think about third-party risk management. That's more about looking outside the organization and thinking about how do we maintain or develop sustainable, long-term, trusting partnerships, relationships where, I guess, and these are my words now, but I'd love for you to comment on it. Ultimately, you, I would assume, want those third parties, fourth parties, fifth parties, the supply chain ultimately, to be able to uphold the highest levels of ethical behavior that you and the brand of what Verizon stands. How do you connect the dots there with that?
So first, let me just take on the internal point, because you touched on something that's really near and dear to me, and then I'll turn to the third party issues. Internally, I mean, you're right. Learning the lessons is so important. And, you know, the Justice Department talks about this, and it's something we've done, I think, you know, sometimes more successfully than others, but it's such a priority for us to make sure that when you have an investigation, when you have things go wrong, and when, honestly, when people lose their careers over it, that you give that as much meaning as you can. And so that means talking about it. It means explaining to people what happened. And I think it's always a point of tension, which I think is why the Justice Department calls it out in its guidance, clear, you know, kind of what side of the line they fall on. And it's helpful that they do that. It's really important to try to get the word out in a way that is respectful of people's careers, because I think the vast majority of people in Verizon are ethical, rule-following, excellent people. And one of our corporate values is accountability. And it's very important to the rule-following people that they have confidence that we mean that, that accountability is something that we take seriously, and that for the small percentage of people that are trying to cheat to get ahead, that is something that the company is not okay with and that they're held accountable. So talking about those cases is really important to me. And I think we're always trying to find new and interesting ways of doing that. On third-party risk management, so yeah, it's a different set of challenges there. And so the, kind of how do you go about creating an environment in which all of those thousands, and we have thousands of third parties, and then if you start multiplying it by the subcontractors, you know, many, many more thousands of subcontractors. How do you create that there? And so for us, it's been about building, obviously, a strong third-party risk management program. And it's a couple of things for me and a couple of principles, and we can dive deep into any of these that you want to talk about. But one is making sure that you bring together a coordinated program. I mentioned all of the different risk teams at Verizon. And so it is very counterproductive if those different risk teams are kind of touching third parties each in their own way. And so having a coordinated process managed by the central third-party risk management team lays out the procedure by which questions are asked, answers are obtained, how we rank those, what we do about them, kind of the rules of the game. Those need to be agreed upon by all of the risk teams. So that's one. A second part that I think is critical is explaining things. And this goes for the third parties. So to try to be very clear with them about what our expectations are, what it is we want, just as important as explaining things internally. Because something like a third-party risk program can be viewed as an impediment to the business. And it's really important that the risk teams explain what they're doing, explain why they're doing it, and even be really open about the metrics of how long it's taking us, what delays we are actually introducing, so that folks can understand what's really going on. And I've always found, whether it's in an investigation or whether it's with rolling out a compliance program, if I do a good job in assembling the facts and explaining the facts to the business, I have always been able to get the alignment and agreement that I need to do my job. It's when I don't do my job and do a poor job of explaining it, when that's when I encounter friction. And then just the final point on kind of a principle for success in the third party space, differentiation is so important because we're dealing with just such a wide range of suppliers, okay? And being able to differentiate between the landscaper, the pencil company, and the outsource vendor that's handling customer information or that has systems access, that is so important. And if you kind of go with a one-size-fits-all approach, it isn't just a waste of time, but it damages the whole compliance program because it looks wasteful, it is wasteful, and we don't want to be wasteful. So finding ways that you can differentiate, bring the right compliance and risk management measures to bear on the right vendors, that's really important. It's a lot of extra work, but ultimately it creates a more efficient process.
Picking some of those points apart a little more then, you mentioned about bringing together the coordinated program, including the partners. You said in there that maybe this was my interpretation of what I think you said, David, you know, sometimes people can get frustrated at the time it takes to get there. It sounds to me like a lot of your time is spent on managing stakeholders internally in the organization, getting that alignment in order that the teams can then do their work. Is there a, because you have a diverse community, and when you talked about, you know, the security office, you talked about the privacy office, the business unit compliance, and then you talked about internal audit, you know, all of those stakeholders that sit outside of the organization that you are leading will likely have their particular directions that they want to head in. Now, how do you, thoughts, tips for those listening, what's the success in trying to get common view of how Verizon tackles developing sustainable relationships with different segments of your third-party community?
You're exactly right that that is a big part of my job. And it took me a little while probably to understand it because I went doer by nature and I spent my first 14 years at Verizon as a compliance lawyer with specific responsibilities. And I take great joy from executing the tasks and getting stuff done. And, you know, talking to the other leaders and getting alignment is a huge part of my job and really is what enables success for the 100 and some people that work at my direction. And so that required kind of a big shift in mindsets. You're right about that. I'm very lucky to have the partners that I work with. So between our head of internal audit, our controller, our CISO, our chief privacy officer, these are people who have a very similar mindset as I do. They are very interested in tackling risks and making sure that the company is pursuing its long-term interests. So that makes it easy in some ways. You know, at a tactical level, what I try to do is to make sure, especially when we're talking about third-party risk, what I can offer them as the person who's responsible for the third-party risk management team is making sure that they have a vehicle through which they can carry out their responsibilities. I'm not here to second-guess their priorities as privacy leaders or information security leaders or leaders of the other risk areas. I'm here to provide a service, really, and to make sure that I have created an efficient, well-run third-party risk management team that can help them achieve their goals. If I don't do that, then we're going to start to see, you know, pressure on the system, and they are going to need to take care of their priorities one way or another. So I need to make sure that I'm delivering that service to them. So I approach a lot of it with that mindset. We also talk about what our priorities are, and there's a lot of overlap in those. And I think we can find ways to make sure, again, that we're touching the suppliers as few times as possible, that when we put a questionnaire to them, that when we get an answer for them, that we act in a concerted way to share that risk information across all the teams so we can measure twice or three times and cut once. That's been successful thus far. We still have a lot of work ahead of us, but I couldn't ask for better partners than the ones I have.
The second point you made when you were breaking down what the priorities are for you and the team in third-party risk management, you said explaining things to third parties and to internal teams. You made the point that, of course, there are thousands, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of third parties and subcontractors, as you said, that are in your supply chain. You mentioned explaining things as to why is it important for you to go through a process as a third party in order that we can do business. I can imagine those questions being a very real question, especially when you think about the landscaper, as you pointed out, through to, you know, a very sophisticated manufacturer or supplier of infrastructure. Let's leave it at that level for now. How do you go about, you know, the communication challenge with those third parties, the ease of onboarding, which surely has to be a really important thing so that that third party doesn't see it as onerous to engage in a business partnership with Verizon, bearing in mind they're likely being asked by a multitude of other partners, vendors, customers of theirs to do exactly the same. How do you differentiate there to ensure that not only it's easy to understand, but it's also easy to participate? And also, can I say, you know, easy to continue to update and have that flexibility of not having to continually fill out questionnaires or screening questionnaires of one form or another? How does that work?
Again, a couple of principles. One, just like internally, flexibility is really important. And I think when you work in a very large, sophisticated organization that has outside counsel, that has hundreds of lawyers, you develop just by habit certain expectations of what the right answer is to a question, and that it involves, you know, a lengthy PowerPoint deck and lots of footnotes or whatever. You know, we're dealing with all kinds of suppliers here. You may be dealing with something that's privately held that doesn't have outside counsel or any counsel, and their idea of what an appropriate response is going to look very different than what we're used to seeing day in, day out. That doesn't mean it's an inappropriate response or an insufficient response. So being flexible about what is an appropriate response and focusing on the substance, not the form, is important. So that's one principle we try to adhere to. Another thing that's important is avoiding artificial stage gates in the process. And by that, I mean, in as much as possible, doing the risk management work in parallel to the sourcing work. There's a lot that happens completely apart from risk management as part of onboarding, assessing a third party. And that a lot of that work can happen in parallel to the risk management processes. So that, I think, can really help take some of the pressure off of this and just give you some time to work through things, give the third party some time to work through things. It isn't that you've just sort of stopped the whole process until you've, you know, worked through all of these questions. You might need to stop a process depending on what happens, but that should be only when absolutely necessary.
You mentioned also in the previous comment that you made that when we were talking about explaining things to third parties, you mentioned that some work that you do that's also in parallel to the sourcing work with those third parties to release pressure, I think you said. So where does sourcing of third parties sit? Does that sit with procurement or a procurement team or adjacent to what they do? And therefore, that looseness of relationship where you're looking at the risk profile of a third party that is either already been sourced or in the process of a discovery of sourcing third parties for a particular issue, problem, or service, let's say. How do you work with procurement, if that's where it takes place, to embed that in there? Because I see that as a particularly powerful relationship. I would have thought that you're actually engaging with the third party on all matters related to, you know, a commercial arrangement, I would have thought, with Verizon.
Yeah, we have a sourcing and procurement organization that sits within a broader global services organization. So that's basically, you know, that provides services to the whole company. Our third-party risk management team, actually, when it was first created, sat within the sourcing organization. As it matured, it moved out and now, you know, is basically housed with our risk teams. And I think that was just a question of maturity. As it became sort of a true risk organization, it made a lot of sense to put them with enterprise risk management. But you're right, wherever it is, if it's within sourcing, it's important that it have a sufficient risk flavor, enough risk inputs to do their job. If it's out of sourcing, it's important that it be close enough to the sourcing organization where we're not just sort of blindly doing the risk activities without sort of proper, very close coordination with sourcing. I think given its pedigree coming out of sourcing, the relationships between third-party risk management and sourcing are very strong and, you know, sort of constantly sharing information to make sure that work is done in close coordination. Yeah, there is a lot of opportunity for friction. And so it's important that we are clear about what we're doing from a risk perspective, what friction is it introducing, what friction can we remove, you know, because ultimately the goal is for the company to be able to procure third-party services as quickly and efficiently as possible. And one thing that I think we all need to really keep in mind as compliance folks is if your processes create really unacceptable hurdles, people are going to go around your process and they will go around sourcing, they will go around third-party risk management, and they will get their services that they need. It's not just a question of how seriously are we taking compliance. You need to balance the risk of people going around you. And that's something that is that's a huge risk because you lose all sorts of controls if that happens.
Would it also be fair to consider that relationship with those third parties if it's a superior relationship and it is frictionless, picking up on your word earlier, in terms of the day-to-day ongoing management of that relationship? Naturally, a business unit probably has the day-to-day relationship with them because they benefit from that, but the process that you take them through is likely to be an experiential thing. And would it be too much of a stretch to assume that providing that superior onboarding experience, participation experience, training experience, upholding those code of conduct that you talked about, could that be seen as, if done well, could that be seen as, you know, strategic competitive advantage? Because at the end of the day, those third parties are also working possibly with other parts of your supply chain elsewhere or potentially other competitors as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And that is not just unique to the third party risk area. That is true of everything a compliance organization does. Treating our customers the right way is a competitive advantage. Okay. And that means whether it's excellent customer service, or it also means treating them ethically. And customers know when they're being sold to the right way, and they know when they're being sold to the wrong way. And I think, you know, the same thing goes for third party. So the most important thing for a compliance organization to do is to understand the impact it's having on the business, to really work in partnership with the business so that it's not an either or sort of choice. Like, do we do this, you know, in a compliant way or do we do it in an efficient way? You have to do it so that it's efficient and compliant and serves the company's business interests. And that takes some extra work. I know it takes a lot of extra stakeholding and explanation, but that's ultimately a big part of my job. And it's really exciting to see it happen successfully. It takes some learning. I mean, when I first started at the company, I'll freely admit that was not my mindset. You come in, I'd worked in government for 9 years. I had done a lot of investigations. That's sort of what I first did at the company. So you come in kind of with a little bit of it's this or that sort of mindset. And that is not the right approach to bring to compliance. You have to look for everyone to be a winner. You have to look for ways to make, the process better and to serve the company's long-term business interests. And I'm very fortunate and privileged to work at a company like Verizon that really gets that. The leaders, I don't need to go and write scripts for leaders to talk about selling with integrity. This is people who have been brought up in this company understand that. That comes naturally to them.
I like that. Everyone's a winner. That's great. We did talk about some of those internal, we spent a lot of time talking about third-party risk. Is there a connection between what's going on within those third parties and the relationships that may exist, employees within the company? And how do you square off that potential area for conflict? And let's face it, we see it a lot here in the headlines, sometimes, or mainly in a way that we perhaps would like to see that. But how do you think about, is there a program or is there a recognition that that's something that needs to be understood and looked at? And when you think about, those third parties, of course, you could have individuals in the organization that have family members connected to that. They may have past relationships that could impact that relationship. They may be other forms of directors or non-executive directors involved in some of those businesses as well. Is that something that concerns you or concerns the business?
Conflicts of interest are something that are near and dear to me. I have a lot of concern about them, and I think they're particularly acute in any large organization, whether it's a big company, whether it's the government. Sort of the ability of folks to put their own interests ahead of the company is something that is that weighs on my mind. And so there are a few different ways we tackle it. Obviously, by having clear rules, by training on those rules. That's table stakes. We have a conflict of interest questionnaire process. So for a substantial number of employees, we ask them annually. Basically, it's a great prompt for them to kind of take inventory, think about their relationships internally and externally, and disclose any that might be problematic. And we get a lot of disclosures, and it's just a great opportunity to talk through things with employees. So we do that. We do, when things go wrong, we investigate aggressively and we hold folks accountable. And I think then another important part, as I touched on earlier, is being really open, communicating about those matters to the extent possible, sharing lessons learned. Because like I said, we have a large and rule-following group of employees who take comfort from the fact that we take these rules so seriously. When cultural problems can occur is when folks whisper about a situation. Hey, what was going on with them? Didn't they have a romantic relationship? Well, didn't he hire his cousin? And whatever happened to so-and-so? And they don't know. Maybe actually what happened is that it was disclosed, investigated, and folks were held accountable. But no one knows until actually someone in authority explains that and tells them what happened. And so we really do look to do that. And we see the cultural dividends when we speak openly about matters. And we can go into this a little bit more if you like, but we do an integrity survey that measures folks' sentiment about cultural issues at the company. And we see the impact of speaking openly about integrity issues. And we see the comfort that employees take from it. So I think that's a key ingredient of addressing issues like conflicts of interest that are so often, they really go to the heart of the culture. They go to the heart of your ability to run a large organization.
Fascinating. I mean, I've not heard anybody talk about an integrity survey before, which is awesome and goes some way to reinforce, I suppose, and align with the name of GAN Integrity, I guess. But when you talk about the impact on culture there, there's, I guess, also the alignment with employee satisfaction surveys that you or the teams in the business do as well. There's the joining up of that, isn't it? When you actually look at sentiment, as you described there, in terms of impact on culture. You've mentioned culture a couple of times. Often when I've spoken to peers of yours, we talk about that being the framework that holds everything together. And I think you sort of alluded to that too here as we've gone through this discussion. I ought to ask you, how would you describe the culture at Verizon? Because people listening will want to know.
I tell people that I think having my job at a company like Verizon is a tremendous privilege. The culture is what makes my job easy in a lot of ways. The DNA of this company is a rule following, I think because it's a heavily regulated company, it always has been. And I think a deep respect for the rules and for doing things the right way is at the heart of the company. You know, we have a credo that says integrity is at the core of who we are. Now, lots of companies have, you know, sort of nice words and their credos and their mission statements, but I get to see that play out on a regular basis. I get to see the tough decisions that executives have to make. And I say this, it's like I said, it's a privilege to get to mean it. But basically, I think what I can say is when I do my job, when we assess the risks and determine the facts and present them correctly, the right decisions get made. And that for me is what the culture, that's living proof of the culture and why I love working here and love doing this job specifically at Verizon.
You actually answered my last question, which was, what is it that motivates you every day? We've met for the first time today. You have a huge amount of passion. I can see the energy and genuine desire to progress the cause for what compliance does, not just within the team that you lead, but also how it impacts so many other parts of the business. Continuing, you know, keeping that motivation on a day-to-day basis in a complex business like yours, of course, takes a lot of inner strength to be able to do that. For those listening, if you were to pass on some words of wisdom, David, that you always come back to when you're thinking about some of the life, it isn't always easy, is it? You know, when we're dealing with some of the complex issues that we have to deal with, what are those core principles that actually sit within you that steer you when you're thinking about how we progress the cause here for what this team and the organization is doing when it comes to ethics and compliance?
That's a really good question. One of the things that keeps me energized and on my feet is the complexity of the job. This is a really complex company. So it is never easy. We are never on cruise control here. And so critical part of making sure that that is always true is humility. And so, you know, you can never get complacent. You can never feel like, oh, I've been here for 17 years. I've seen it. I've done it. I know the answer. I most definitely do not know the answers. I, you know, sometimes don't even understand the question. And so making sure that you approach a situation with humility and that you're starting with that metaphorical blank piece of paper. I have a lot of principles. I often bring a lot of preconceptions to problem. And so that's not my issue. I need to make sure that I'm not bringing too many. And so I really want to make sure that I'm listening, understanding the facts, and I'm not wedded to here is what I did 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and therefore it must be the right answer today. This place is changing very rapidly, and I want to make sure that I'm taking a fresh look at the problems in front of me. So I think humility, flexibility, open-mindedness are all really critical, and then a lot of hard work. So
that last one, really important. David, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Risky Business. Thank you for your time today. Fascinating conversation. I think we covered a huge amount of ground there. I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
No, thank you, Steve.
Thanks for listening to Risky Business. For more insights and resources, check out the show notes or go to ganintegrity.com and be sure to follow along wherever you get your audio.